Welcome to the Amplifying Optimism in Education podcast, where we connect with educators from across the globe who are creating a better future for learning and educating now by implementing bold ideas and fostering a sense of curiosity, creativity, and possibility. Alrighty, welcome to this episode of the Amplifying Optimism in Education podcast. I'm your host, Michael Carson, along with my co-host. Actually, I'm a co-host too, Joshua Faden. And we have a special episode here in our Like No Other School Year series. It's based on the work of Pamela Gaudette. Our guests today are from the ATLAS organization, the Association of Technology Leaders in Independent Schools. And really, they speak to all schools and all school leaders about the role of technology in many different ways, and I'll let them speak more about that. But we've got Susan Davis, who is the Director of Professional Development from ATLAS, and Christina Llewellyn, who is the Executive Director of ATLAS. And I will now turn it over to Pamela to get us started here.
So as I interviewed the 32 educators for my book, Like No Other School Year, it came up again and again. I had interviewed technology educators, technology leaders. It came up again and again, some of the cybersecurity, some of the privacy things, some of the unique things that were coming up because sometimes for the first time, devices were going to the homes of students in networks that they could not control, in places that they could not control. Even the schools or districts that had one-to-one did not have it all in the elementary school. So very rarely was there a K through 12 one-to-one program. And obviously with one-to-one, there would be a device that would go home, or sometimes that device, they considered themselves, schools considered themselves one-to-one, but the device stayed in place and did not go home. And I heard from these educators I spoke to that they were kind of frantically taking laptops and unwiring them off of carts and bringing them home. Sometimes they were not even asking parents to have a signature to even acknowledge that they had this device because of the time frame. They were putting them on buses and driving them around to neighborhoods and things like that. So it was a tough time. It was remote emergency learning. And so I realized as I was interviewing these technology educators that there needed to be a chapter that addressed cybersecurity. So I immediately thought of what organizations would be best for this, and ATLAS came right to mind, because ATLAS, even though it is for educators, technology leaders in independent schools, a lot of what they do can be applied to any school. It can be applied to public schools, international schools, charter schools, etc. So it's wonderful that Christina and Susan are here, and I'm just wondering if you could just give us a quick overview of this chapter and what you were trying to accomplish in Chapter 8 about cybersecurity and technology.
Thanks, Pamela. This is Susan. What I feel like we were really trying to address was, what was specific to the pandemic and ongoing with anybody who's moving back and forth from working at school to working at home, but also to cybersecurity more generally, because some schools, as you mentioned, had things in place and ready to go. They already had robust cybersecurity programs, but they then were, you know, very quickly moving devices out, and they may not have been properly set up for cybersecurity, et cetera. They're now dealing with home networks. So, but all of the recommendations that ATLAS makes are really should be in place for everyone all the time. It's just only more so now, and you know, maybe some little particular considerations for working from home. But frankly, I don't see that going away. You know, I see that becoming an issue when you have a blizzard in Philadelphia, for example, or whatever. It's gonna, these issues were there all along, and they have just become even more critical during this time of the emergency and the pandemic.
Yeah, this is Christina. I'll just add to that, that really what we saw as this thing unfolded is that whatever security was in place, whether it was actual like cybersecurity systems or whether it was more manual processes in place for security and for help desks and for parent support, all of those systems came under an immense amount of stress naturally with this whole thing blowing up so quickly. So what we found was that there was this real discrepancy among schools, some that had great cybersecurity programs and cyber safety measures in place. Those systems were put under strain, but they fared okay. And then we saw schools that didn't have that kind of protection in place, and it was just a hot mess. And so really what is happening now is that, you know, certainly schools are taking stock of where the pressure points were on their systems, but also, you know, what they can do in kind of the post-pandemic era to make sure that there are systems and structures in place to keep everybody safe. And it's not just from bad actors. It's not from hacks. It's, you know, as simple as you now have parents on the other side of that iPad trying to help a child, and there's passwords and there's programs and there's apps, and a lot of apps that were secured without, you know, carefully reading privacy policies. And so the whole system just came under a lot of strain. And now our especially technology leaders, but also any kind of risk management position in a school is left to evaluate that and also try to get those horses back in the barn. So it's not particularly easy.
Right. And I would just say that when I talk about the recommendations for everybody, it's really a matter of, first of all, recognizing what the technology leader and the tech team can do, but also realizing that this is a team effort. Okay. On the first level, it's a team effort. So everybody, if you think about how technology touches every aspect of a school, and that's complicated even further when you have a school district, then you have a sense of who are the people who handle the vulnerable data? You know, who needs to come to the table and begin to address, like, what are our policies for working from home? How are we going to implement multi-factor authentication? The technology leader has to deal with people and a culture. And so all of those things need many people. You know, if it was just flipping the switches and turning on security measures or keeping your servers up to date, they've got that pretty much. And as Christina said, it was put under a strain during the pandemic. But, you know, they know what their marching orders are in the tech realm. But tech leaders need to have that way of bringing everyone together to address this as a cultural all-school safety issue, you know. So one thing, for example, that in the past that has been, you know, a little bit controversial sometimes is doing simulated phishing attacks with your school. And the schools that we know who have done this consistently over time see a huge improvement in how people respond this case, don't respond to a phishing attack, which is the start of any kind of cybersecurity issue. So that's one thing. But on the other hand, we have lots of people who never get that kind of training, who are never, you know, given access to new information about this kind of scam is going around these days, right? And if you think about that all the way down to the parents and the students, they need to know when not to click. So this is why it needs to be thought of as a standard of care. That's how we refer to it, a standard of care for everyone's safety in the school. And we have that standard of care when it comes to physical safety. You know, we have all kinds of alerts and things that have been built into place, training drills for if you have, you know, someone unwanted on campus, et cetera, et cetera. And I am not by any means belittling any of those things or a fire drill or any of that. Those things are important. But the likelihood that there's going to be some kind of phishing attack or some kind of data breach is much higher. Why are we not doing the kinds of drills that we need to do for that? So, you know, that's just one little piece of this that needs to be just part of the culture.
Yeah. I think that's, first of all, Christina and Susan, I think your energy and enthusiasm and, you know, your heart's in what you're speaking about. And I think that's a challenge for tech directors, because not only do they have to deal with the culture of the school, you know, I don't know if you guys know that those videos where there's like people, like they're like playing basketball and the gorilla walks by and no one sees the gorilla, you know, and you would be crazy to say there's a gorilla, there's an elephant in the room. And tech directors see that gorilla, they see that elephant in the room. And I hear what you're saying is so powerful, that, that, you know, how do you engage your community in seeing the elephant in the room? You know, because otherwise, no matter what you implement security wise, you're just having people comply with new security. They don't yet see why they're doing it. I think that is a really something really important that you highlight, that this is about caring for each other, and that this is about helping people see what we're actually talking about here when it comes to cybersecurity.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's no one who can argue that this year was and is the absolute spotlight year for technology leaders. If they were not in the spotlight before, they have since been thrust into it. And, you know, what we're seeing is that maybe that person in the room who says, guys, I think there's an elephant here, it might be that finally they're getting some of that attention, and also some of those leadership skills to be able to step forward and say, hey, yo, there is an elephant in this room. You got to trust me on this. And so what we're finding is that technology leaders, you know, really at every size school, at every kind of structure of school, public, private, anywhere in between, charter, technology leaders are now more than ever being considered part of that top echelon of leadership and thought leadership out of school. And so, and that's fantastic, because that needs to be the case. Technology is just so omnipresent. It's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It touches everything. And so if you're making strategic decisions about how to accomplish the mission of your school for the betterment of your learners, if you don't have technology leaders sitting in that table with you, you are wasting time, you're wasting money. And so part of what Atlas has been able to do during this period is help our members and even help just our broader community be prepared to step into those leadership roles and know when it is time to step up and say, there's an elephant here.
These are all great points. And this definitely came out during my research too. And a lot of the tech educators that I interviewed said indeed that tech was getting this central role. For the first time, one of my interviewees said that his educational technologies were giddy with the possibilities, because, you know, tech was often behind the scenes, but it was right in the middle of things. I wanted to ask you a little bit something about students. You know, we see now that in society, we are definitely moving to more and more remote work, remote jobs. They're coming and going again and again. My husband is working from home, and he's been working, and they told him lately now he may go back in the spring or may go back later. And this is happening again and again. Do you think schools are thinking in this terms? Do you think teachers are thinking in this terms of educating students for not just now, but for the remote workforce that they're going to enter?
Yes, I would say, this is Susan, I would say that we have seen more and more questions, more and more interest, more and more sharing of information about how has the pandemic forced us to rethink what we think of as digital citizenship, or, you know, the ways in which we address students about their interaction with the world in a digital space. And you can add to that working from home. So all the elements of working from home. And I would say that's educating both the students and their parents, right? Because it has to work in tandem. But, you know, in the old days, we would have been educating students about digital citizenship, which might mean, you know, A, that you credit your sources, and B, that you're a nice person online, right? But now we have to really get students to be aware of what are the ways in which they may be fish in their personal life, or what are the ways in which they have personal information that they may not at a later date you know, they may not care right now, you know, when they're on a gaming system, but they, at a later date, they may care that certain personal data had not got, had gotten out there. So yes, as you said earlier, Michael, it's the why, understanding the why. The students need to understand the why, because frankly, they're of a generation that really thinks about privacy in a different way than we do. And so we need to help them see that their privacy is something of value. It is something that that has value to others, you know, and that, you know, they should be conscious of the decisions that they make about sharing things. And then, you know, on the cybersecurity level, you know, we're hearing about things like, and I've seen this again and again with schools in my own experience and the leaders I work with, often some of these things come in through gaming. You know, a lot of hackers start in the gaming world. And so, you know, they are now able to duplicate the certificates that authenticate gaming users. And so, okay, let's just assume that gamer might be the son or the daughter of somebody who works at a school who is a little careless about letting someone else use their device. I know that would never happen in the schools that you've worked with, but I know it's happened. It's happened with friends of mine. And, you know, people are just sort of very casual about how they share their devices. We can't be that casual anymore.
So when we talk about the students, then when we talk about the importance of it, how do we draw the students in so that they're a part of this process, they're a part of this learning, and they're a part of the necessary steps that we need to take to help to secure them and also to educate them so that it's meaningful to them now and in the future?
Yeah, so you may not know this, but I used to be an English teacher in schools for about 100 years. And so, I feel like and one of the things that I focused on over the years many, many times was writing across the curriculum. So, you know, what we need to have is technology skills across the curriculum. It has to be embedded in everything. The classroom teachers need to understand for themselves the why of why they need to be careful. And then they need to have also an understanding of how to communicate that to their students, because they're the pipeline, right? They're the ones who are going to be communicating and asking things to their students. They're going to be the ones who have, you know, the real go-getter students who come into a class and say, hey, can I use this app for my project? The teacher says, well, sure, that's wonderful. You're going to learn how to code. Yeah. But the teacher doesn't take the time to figure out the, you know, the privacy concerns, et cetera. So everybody has to be alert. And I would say the teachers taking some ownership of this, and not just the ed tech teachers, but all educators, is really, we've just got to communicate how important it is.
I think you mentioned some of the apps that are coming into schools now, and I know that during the whole school closing, and by the way, schools are continuing to be closed. You know, this does not just stop in June 2020. It's continued, and so a lot of these issues we're talking about have continued. So I know that, for instance, before COVID, there were estimates of more than 500 apps and applications in place in school districts, more than 500, probably more like 500 to 1,000 in place. And that increased during this time. What advice do you give to Atlas members about apps and about what to do about apps and how to address apps, and also what about some of these free apps that suddenly get a price tag?
Well, certainly that has come home to roost. So I would just say that, one of the language bit of clarification pieces is that, you know, we'll hear our members say schools are not closed. Schools are fully operational. It's just that they're operating in a much different way. So just a little point there. But, you know, I think with the apps, what's really interesting is, again, if those processes were in place, then they really came under a lot of strain because so much request was happening so quickly. And so in some cases, they might have fallen to the wayside, but it is really difficult to put that toothpaste back in the tube, especially when privacy policies were not reviewed ahead of time. Students and teachers are signing up for hundreds of apps, and you know, and now that's it's out there. I think that what there's a couple points where it rubs. One is that teachers were trying to solve problems quickly, but parents were getting really frustrated. So we're hearing about how parents are like, look, I have four kids, or I have three kids, I have 8,000 things I need to sign into, and this enough is enough. And so I think that you're seeing a lot of schools kind of streamline their offerings. This is what we offer for this type of a solution. And, you know, and I think that it's got to be sort of whittled down so that it can be managed. If there weren't systems in place for teachers to request apps, those are certainly, you know, in place now. And I think that the schools that are faring better from a privacy perspective are the ones that had it locked down, that said, no, you're not downloading anything without checking through the tech team, because we'll make sure that it passes the risk compliance sniff test. However, on the flip, you also have to have technology leaders who are being really open-minded, because teachers are being encouraged to be creative and to rise to the occasion to serve their learners. And if they can't leverage great solutions out in the marketplace, then, you know, that also is kind of, it's a rub that needs to be, it's a tension that needs to be resolved. And so I think a lot of schools are just sort of working through it in a way that really fits with their culture and their general philosophy about technology. But the final thing that, you know, I would add is that, you know, as we're talking about just how many there are, how pervasive they are, you know, this is really what technology leaders have wanted for a long time. They want teachers to get techie. They want teachers to take advantage of great solutions. And so now is not the time to be, you know, kind of the person, the hatchet man that comes along and says, no, no technology, no apps. That's not the answer. There has to be a middle ground that sort of, you know, kind of meets a compromise that works, you know, for everybody, for the teachers, for the learners, and for the safety of everybody. But I will also say one last thing about those free apps that are no longer free. A lot of technology budgets are just out of control this fall, going into early next year, because all those free trial periods are over and you've trained the students and the parents to use those apps. And so now, whether you like it or not, you are footing the bill. And that has been a big challenge for tech teams.
I'm hearing you when we talk about these numbers, 500, 1,000 apps, you know, it's hard to kind of really understand that impact. And so I'm curious, when we think about how do you choose which app you're going to use, how do you vet the apps, how do you, as you said, have technology directors that are open to new ideas, to new apps, to new ways to understand the value and also the security risks? And so how do you increase that awareness and then put it into policy and practice within a school in a very short period of time? Because as you said, things are changing so rapidly just generally. And now within this pandemic era, it's like lightning speed of having to keep up. So what are the steps that schools actually go through to be able to vet and to understand and to put this into practice?
Well, as Christina said, you know, this really is dependent on the culture of the school. And so some school districts or schools might be very locked down just because that's all they can manage, right? They can even from a financial and staffing standpoint, every time you add an app, that's something else that has to be managed on the back end. So I would say that is one thing to think about. You know, that is one culture and one way of going about it. But, you know, as we know, all of these things, as I said at the beginning, it involves a team. People, teachers perhaps, and tech team members need to get together and discuss what are their priorities. Why do we have five QR code readers or whatever, just because the culture of the school is, well, every teacher gets to do what they want. And I've been in schools like that. You know, I was one of those rogue teachers who was always going out there and getting new apps and had no idea of the impact that I was making on the tech team. I was doing it because I was trying to find the best things for the kids that I taught. So I think just more and more inclusion of people in the discussion and the process, and then, you know, read those privacy policies. You know, we all just click them and move on. And we don't really go in and say, you know, okay, are they really protecting the identities of our students? Are they taking the measures that we want them to take? In a webinar that we had for Atlas yesterday, the very last question of the day was about it was from a technology director who was saying, what are the questions I need to be asking the vendors who provide these services or policies about their cyber safety? So, you know, we're all in this together. And I think we all have a different kind of perspective that is valuable to bring together and come to decisions as a team.
I really appreciate you using the word inclusion, because there's so many stakeholders in a school. There's students, there's teachers, there's administrators, but now we have a major stakeholder in parents. We always had parents as stakeholders in schools, but parents have taken on a new role in many cases. So what advice do you have for technology leaders about how to bring parents into conversations?
That's a good question. and I will say it's a tricky question. I guess I'm not really hedging, but I'm saying that having come from a school background, I know that there's a hesitation to bring parents in. And at the same time, there was an absolute need. I mean, we had a special summit in the summer that was on working with younger students. We can't really have online education with younger students without some adult in the room to help them do whatever we're asking them to do, right? So I think it's going back to that sense of your culture. Some schools depend, you know, schools vary greatly in what their parents are doing or how many parents are home with the kids. I would say more and more focus groups on working with parents on what do they need. We have some schools who are members of Atlas who have done a great job of surveying the parents, you know, pretty regularly to get the data on what's working and what's not. We've had other schools who have, you know, done a really terrific job of making a dashboard for parents to make it easier. So I would just say have the conversations. On the other side, also tech people need to understand we have to make it easy. We have to simplify. We have a tendency with tech, as with most other things in schools, we just keep adding on. We're just going to add. And then, I think it's kind of like the tax code. You know, every once in a while we have to go in and we have to clear everything out. We may have to make it super simple. And then we add again. So it's just an ongoing process. And the more stakeholders that you have in the conversation, the better things are going to be for the learners at your school.
You know, one of the things that I'm kind of thinking about as we're talking about all these really important, fascinating topics and thinking about, you know, schools I've been working with a little bit over the course of the pandemic, you know, first thing is it's a moving target. You know, what are the security risks? What are the concerns? Because conditions are changing very quickly, you know, as we all know. And budgets are changing. You know, I've been talking with schools, you know, typically, you know, you kind of have your planning cadence, you know, for your projects. And a lot of the task of addressing security issues is kind of can be pretty big projects that need to be managed. How do you see those tech directors who are, you know, thriving and succeeding through this time? And all tech directors, I would say now and forever, have always been very brave souls. How are they taking care of themselves? How are they adapting to the change? And how are they being successful with the moving target?
You know, honestly, Michael, I think that part of it is that they need each other, because sometimes they feel as if they're on an island by themselves in terms of serving a school with all these, you know, stakeholders and constituencies. And so what we saw early in the pandemic is that Atlas had launched a virtual town hall where we sort of opened up the floor and dozens and dozens of people would flood in. And you could see that they had like the deer in the headlights, sort of glassy eyed, what is happening? And what was so interesting is that sometimes those calls, we would get down to brass tacks of something very technical and very detailed. How are you solving this? And then the community would sort of crowdsource that answer. Well, but how does that integrate with my existing SIS, which is this? And so sometimes it was nitty gritty and you could see everybody sort of rolling up the proverbial sleeves and sort of getting into it. But as time went on and as we went through the summer, they had survived the year, you know, the wrap up of the spring. They had figured out how to do virtual graduations. Then they started planning, you know, A, B, C, and D scenarios for the fall. You know, like, are we open? Are we not? You know, but they had to have so many plans. And it got to the point where sometimes we would be on town halls because we continued this throughout, you know, at first it was weekly and then it went a couple times a month. And we still do those types of casual gatherings a couple times a month. And there were times in the late summer, early fall where we would get on and a tech leader would start to talk about her scenario and she would cry. You know, she would break down into tears because she's so exhausted and they just announced that such and such is happening and now they can't go with plan B. Now they're on plan F, you know, and they were just exhausted. And so what was interesting was that coming together and knowing they weren't alone, which is that not what's going on with all of us in this pandemic, right? Sometimes we just need to know that we're not the only ones sitting and staring at the wall thinking, am I nuts? Am I crazy? You know? And so we found that bringing folks together really helped them kind of navigate it. But we also learned as a staff that sometimes we were ready to talk about things and they weren't. So we also learned kind of the hard way that, you know, Susan and I would be kind of facilitating a conversation and we'd be like, all right, are you ready to reflect? What did you learn? What are you going to keep? What are you going to toss? And our tech leaders would be like, enough. We're not ready to think like that yet. We're still tired and we need a nap and a bowl of Wheaties before we have a conversation about what we're keeping and what we're not keeping. And so, you know, it's really been, I think it's safe to say that the Atlas community is as close-knit a family as we have ever been. And where some organizations are worried about their membership rosters and how many folks are going to come back and renew, Atlas is seeing growth like never before. And it's not in a way that we're offering some silver bullet of how to survive this. I think the silver bullet is the community. You know, they need each other and they're finding value in each other. And so that self-care is coming because we're all looking each other in the eye via Zoom and saying, you know, y'all got to take care of yourselves and that we're here for you. So it's really been, it's been a tightening of that community that I don't think will go away.
I think that that's a common theme as well in any industry right now, right? Where, as you said, you don't want to feel alone. You don't want to feel that you're the only one going through these issues. And so I'm curious, where is the future then for not only this industry with technology directors, but also I think if we come out of this pandemic with nothing else, it's that need to be, to feel connected to our community, but then to also be part of the larger community. So where's the two-part question then is, where is the community for tech directors going? And then where do you see that role fitting into the larger community post-pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to change, no doubt. Honestly, I think that this is that concept of the tech leader being thrust into the spotlight. Okay, now she's there and he, she, they are prepared. And now we need to talk about how we're going to serve a more strategic role in our schools. And so the tech teams, you know, come together and the tech leaders come together and talk about best practices, solutions. Sometimes they're a shoulder to cry on. But what that really is that team then strengthens itself and each other. And then we send everybody back to their schools. And once they're back at their schools, they have this incredible opportunity to make big long-term impacts on the nature and the philosophy of technology at their schools. So that could be equity issues. It could be, you know, forward-looking. How are we preparing our students for their careers in the future? Or even as simple as look at, you know, these middle and high school students who are now prepared to go to college because of what this year has brought them in terms of, you know, being able to be self-motivated and driven. And I think that what's happening is that where I think a lot of independent schools for sure, but schools in general, there's a lot of siloed activities, right? Here's the tech leadership team and here's the teachers and here's the administration. And that is all a big spider web now. It's so interwoven and interconnected that the technology leaders, yeah, we're helping each other and we're a very tight knit, like we got this kind of community. But what that also means is that there's a certain amount of a pat on the shoulder and saying, here are the best practices. Here's that duty of care that Susan was talking about, this responsibility that you have this in your head. You see the big picture from a technology standpoint. You need to now go back to your administration. You need to get that seat at the table. You need to earn the seat at the table, but also keep the seat at the table to help the school kind of make much more strategic decisions about technology and how it affects the delivery of the education. And so I really think that it has shifted, and I think for the better. I think that the silos are a little bit impossible moving forward. And I think that's a good thing. I think that some really creative solutions are probably going to come out of it.
I like that. We're all nodding our heads. I think that was a mic drop moment for you, Christina. You're like, here it is. That was awesome. Oh. And just for those tech directors who are listening, who are stressed, I think it's that you need to care about yourself like you care about others. And the solution might not be the thing you're going to come up with today, tomorrow, next week. You know, you're not going to fix an entire technology program's worth of security flaws during a pandemic. And I heard that, you know, I was working with a lovely little school just north of Seattle, and tech director had come out of corporate. So very much, you know, this is like from an environment where you just can't let things sit and you have to be on top of it. And you have been and really kind of almost kind of, for lack of a better term, like kind of losing his mind a little bit trying to figure this out. And just the conversation I had with him was, you know, let your administration, let your colleagues know of some of these issues and just start with the first thing that needs to be done, because there's an ecology of your systems. There's an ecology of how people relate, and you can't get sucked down the security rabbit hole all day. There's so much more to do. And so I think that's just really, really appreciate that about what you're saying, Christina and Susan. Of course, both of you are saying this, that this is a process, and we've just kind of, the map has changed is the biggest thing.
And I just wanted to add to that. I do think that because technology leaders, you know, they're similar to teachers in this way, that they are givers, right? They're there to make this, all this wonderful stuff available to people. They want it all to work. They want to help you learn Zoom webinars so you can broadcast with this frontline doctor for COVID. You know, they're givers. And I think what they have learned is that they have to empower others to take on the technology and not do it all. And they have to go out and ask for help, and they have to take care of themselves and their teams, because they are not limitless. They've done amazing things. One of the things I like to do with technology leaders, is to say, just take a moment and think of one or two or three things that you did this year that were just amazing. Mm-hmm. Right. And that list is a mile long. Mm-hmm. But they don't even have time themselves sometimes to step back and go, whoa, that was pretty good, you know, or that was amazing. They're learning to take care of themselves.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I mean, this is such a wonderful conversation full of so much insight and information. Where can folks, especially tech directors who might not be involved in Atlas, or really any school leader or school technologist that is really hungry for community, how can they get involved with Atlas? How can they connect with your community?
Yeah, I think that if we learned anything, you know, Atlas is a fairly young organization. You know, we're a handful of years old, founded because we felt like there were conversations that technology leaders really needed to be having independent of other organizations. And so we're a national organization that's sort of like the best kept secret among technology leaders that are serving students. And so I think that we're stepping into our own spotlight in a weird way. But our website is theatlas, ATLIS.org. And, you know, we've really brought a lot of our resources out into the public, you know, so we are a membership organization, and obviously we're here to serve our members. But, you know, our strategic plan and our kind of vision is much broader than just the membership. You know, it's really the entire school community and any technology leader serving our students, our staff, and faculty that are getting the job done. And so Atlas has brought a lot of resources and tools out from behind the paywall, so to speak, right, to make sure that those tools are out in the community right now because they need to be. But what we're also doing is just really pivoting what we're offering to make sure that it can't be the same old cyber safety workshop. It has to be the post-COVID or the during COVID or the COVID-esque cyber safety workshop. And we've put the time and energy into making sure that everything that we're offering, soup to nuts, is adjusted to be through this lens of this post-COVID, you know, environment. So we have tons of professional development opportunities. We offer these virtual town halls where anybody can come in and have a chat with their peers. And so I encourage people to reach out and get involved. And I think, you know, technology leaders who have not interacted with Atlas will find an incredibly supportive and knowledgeable network. But then even school administrators, you know, we have a lot of CFOs and heads of school. If they weren't paying attention to technology before, they are now. And if that overwhelms heads, principals, superintendents, if that's overwhelming to leadership at schools, come over to Atlas and we can help you navigate that, because we're trying to make sure that we have resources and tools available for the leaders who don't consider themselves particularly techie. But now, guess what? You're in that position and you need to be a leader for your school and for your students. So we can help you kind of get through that.
And I just want to add to that a plug for our thought leadership. I mean, we have people in our community who are thought leaders for technology and education internationally. And so, you know, the things that they come together, the problems they come together and solve are things that they could be drawn upon as resources by other schools. So I just, you know, they're great. I learn from them every day. And I feel like that the public school world and other worlds beyond independent schools can certainly learn from engaging with them. And one of the great things that Pamela's book did was bring together leaders from all aspects. And there are many Atlas members are included in that book. And so, you know, the thought leadership is there. Don't just assume that because you're a public school that this independent school world thought leadership about technology and education is not going to apply to you.
Thank you. That's just great. And it goes to what we were saying earlier in terms of creating the larger community, right? So we'll put all of the notes on how to get in touch with folks at Atlas, how to join that community so that you can learn to take care of yourself, learn to be part of the tech community, and then be whole so that you can go and bring your full self to your larger community of the schools so that we can all impact those we are here to impact, which is our students, and to bring the technology to students in the best way possible so that they thrive now and in the future. So thank you both of you and Pamela as well for being here today for this wonderful conversation and for what you're doing in this world, in this space with technology and bringing it to the larger community at whole.
Yes, thank you for having us. This is wonderful. We appreciate it.
You've been through an extraordinary year. Welcome to the Atlas 2021 Undaunted Conference Experience. In a year marked with creative solutions and groundbreaking advancements in independent school technology, the Association of Technology Leaders in Independent Schools is prepared to deliver an immersive recalibration experience in the form of an annual conference. This is unlike any conference you've ever attended,
In our truly unique approach, Atlas 2021 Undaunted will be a blended conference offering two options for registration. The first is a virtual conference scheduled for April 12th through 13th. This virtual experience will deliver the core content and keynote speakers, complete with virtual networking and a vendor demo day. For your investment in a single registration pass, your entire school team can attend. For those who can join us in person in Seattle on April 26th through 27th, we will host a workshopping retreat to build on the content delivered during the virtual annual conference for only $99 for members and just $199 for non-members. To learn more, visit theatlas.org. Josh and I hope you enjoyed listening to this week's episode of Amplifying Optimism in Education. Please join us next week for another new episode and conversation with an innovative educator from around the world. Thank you.